Today, we were recording at the Ill-Mannered Brewing Company in Powell, Ohio, which is in central Ohio, right next to Columbus, Ohio. They let us go in the back room next to all the vats of beer and record all day. We were there all day on the day that Ohio State won the Big Ten championship. And it was amazing. All of the beer was incredible. They had Chimney Lube, which was their seasonal. And Rudy and I kind of hovered around that. But we tried everything and loved it all. I would suggest if you are in the Central Ohio area and you are looking for a brewery and good beer to go to Ill-Mannered Brewing. If you like this episode, please send them a message of appreciation. They did not charge us to be there and take up room all day. They were great to us. It was great to have a good, solid foundation to start this, no matter where it goes, because we don't know where this is going to go. And we just want to say a big thank you to Ill-Mannered Brewing Company. They were phenomenal.
It's the Love Around the Barrel Podcast with your host, Matthew Barrel Roller Bernard.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Roller Out the Barrel podcast. If you have stumbled upon this podcast looking for polka music, you are in for the treat of your life because there is no polka music. So please find another podcast. All right, today on the show, our guest is from the Columbus Capitals, Nick Sanders. Whoop, whoop.
How's it going?
All right, Nick, we've never officially met until just a matter of minutes ago, so I don't know anything about you.
I think this is a great way to do it.
And that's why this podcast exists, is because we don't know each other.
Right.
And also, sitting in on this podcast is everybody's favorite Michigan Vintage baseball player, Mike Feeney from the Canton Corn Shuckers. Say hi, Mike.
Hi, Mike.
So predictable, Mike. Okay, so, Nick, what we're going to start off with is I'm interested in the vintage baseball aspect of everybody on the show, obviously, because that's the only people that will ever hear this.
Right.
So I'm going to go from your earliest baseball fandom, and what you played, all the way up into current vintage baseball status right now.
Sounds good.
Now, we're only talking about baseball, so we don't talk about we don't talk about wiffle ball. And no kickball. So let's start off. Your earliest memory of baseball.
I think the earliest memory I have of baseball is actually, you know, like my first t-ball practice. I mean, I remember playing a little bit just out in the yard with my parents and stuff here and there. But the reason it registers with me is because I showed up to my first practice and suddenly I couldn't hit. I remember going home afterwards, my mom telling my dad that, hey, you know, I don't know what happened, but the kid hits with you in the front yard all the time, and put him out there and he couldn't do anything. So my dad actually came to my next practice, and it turned out the coach had me hitting from the right side, left-handed. So I think probably the first thing is that was like the realization of I'm left-handed for one, and that we did things different just as a kid. But that's probably the first thing I really remember is being very, very frustrated, actually, that I couldn't figure out what I was doing. And I think that's something that stays with a ball player forever, right? Trying to figure it out, trying to get it right.
Yes, so yes.
It's ironic that kind of my first memory that really stuck with me was being terrible batting from the right side of the plate and then realizing that it made a difference what I was actually doing.
It's funny because no matter what side of the plate I'm hitting, I often feel like I'm on the wrong side.
Fair. That's fair. We all have those days.
Woo! Okay, hey, Nick, you want some beer?
No,
I like beer?
No Chimney Lube yet. The keg blew. They're going to get it going.
So. Okay, so we're coming from the Ill-Mannered Brewing Company in Powell, Ohio. And they have been gracious enough to let us come in and sit next to where the magic happens. Oh, beer! So we have gotten a flight. Thanks, Rudy.
You're welcome.
And we're going to try some of this fantastic beer while we're talking. And, Nick, I'm going to give you the first The first, and you can only go off of name.
Okay. Hit me with it.
No, this says Chimney Lube is right here. It says number 9.
Yeah, this was 9.
Oh, son of a...
I'm sorry.
Okay, so we have Fat Bottom Girl.
Appealing.
We have Zach Morris. Oh, this is great.
I think it's special for you.
Wow. There's A Risky Ending, which is a cream ale. Zach Morris is a IPA. 90s IPA.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And what was the other one? The first one was a Fat Bottom Girl, which is a dark, a Belgian dark. And then lastly, This Be Madness, which is a Doppelbock.
I'm going to go with the Risky Ending.
Rudy?
Yes. I will take the Zach Morris.
Of course you will.
Zach Morris.
Oh, thanks.
Okay, so.
I'll get you a water.
T-ball in the backyard. Finding your way.
Yep.
First experience comes as organized baseball, T-ball, or maybe television. Watching it on television. What comes first?
I think probably playing organized baseball. I mean, I certainly watched baseball as a kid. I don't think that really sticks with me. Going down to Reds games, being at Riverfront Stadium, a lot of those memories, watching the game on TV, not so much. I remember specifically being at a Reds game. This is one of my mother's favorite baseball-related stories to tell. We had great seats, and we were actually sitting behind Marge Schott, who owned the Reds at the time. yeah, exactly. That's what she sounded like the entire game. So my mom takes me down there to meet her, and I talk to her. And she's like, do you want to play for the Reds when you grow up? I said, I absolutely want to play for the Reds when I grow up. But then I want to get traded to the Braves so I can win. Said this directly to Marge Schott's face. My mother almost like spit her drink out of her mouth. She's like, okay, we should probably go sit down. So I told her, yes, I want to play for the Reds. But then I'm going to need you to trade me so I can go to the Braves.
So the
that'd have been like 90, 94, 95. That's probably. Amazing. I was like 5 or 6.
So Riverfront Stadium. That was a terrible stadium, was it not?
Awful.
Yeah.
I mean, in hindsight, at the time as a kid, it's the greatest place in the world, right? But
so
as you go to other ballparks and things, you realize what a dump it really
is. Do you remember some of the players on those Reds teams you would go see?
Yeah, I mean, I think my favorite players just, I mean, obviously natural gravitation with the last name. I was a huge Reggie Sanders fan. Our dog's name growing up was Reggie. Like, our dog's name was Reggie Sanders. Dion played for those teams, too. Those are kind of our running joke. My dad always referred to them as Uncle Reggie and Uncle Dion. Just funny on a number of levels. But I really enjoyed watching those guys play. Chris Sabo, I think, was probably my favorite player as a kid.
Corked bat. Or, no, he was...
No, he corked. Yeah, he had the corked bat.
He had the cork.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. Met him when I was probably 12 years old.
How do you play with those goggles? Those big...
I don't know.
Wow.
I don't know how he did it, but met him when I was about 12, and he was just a complete asshole. Just kind of ruined the whole childhood thing for me.
Yeah, like, don't meet your hero.
This sucks. So
you're a Cincinnati Reds fan.
Yeah,
youth, you're playing T-ball. You move on to, like, minor and majors in Little League.
Yeah, so played through Little League and everything. And then, unfortunately, when I was 13, I started having elbow problems. And I was the quintessential kid who didn't ever want to come out of the game when I was pitching and wouldn't tell anybody about it. So I would quite literally, throw like crazy. No, it's fine. It's not a problem. I would get up and go take aspirin and ice my arm after my parents went to sleep because I wanted to pitch the next day. And unfortunately, what that ultimately resulted in was tearing my arm up pretty bad by the time I was 14 or 15, and ultimately a surgery that pretty much ended competitive baseball for me when I was about a sophomore in high school. I played a little bit as a sophomore and a junior, but my arm, just between the injury and lack of strength at that age and not rehabbing it properly because I just wanted to play ball, is kind of the end of really being able to play high school baseball. And then that's why Vintage was so great, because after growing, strengthening, being able to come back and play.
How many years are there between sophomore high school baseball and Vintage baseball?
5 or 6, I think.
And you started with Capitals first team?
I started with the Capitals when I was, 21?
You got to be 21 to play on the Capitals, don't you? It's in the waiver.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Or have a permission slip from somebody. I actually kind of came into Vintage baseball a completely different way, I think, than the average player. I think most people find it through a friend or somebody they meet at the softball field or somebody they played high school ball with or something says, you got to come try this. I'm a rarity, I think, in that I actually grew up a fan of the game. So I grew up maybe a 10-minute drive away from where the Carriage Hill, at the time, Claude Busters played. So my dad used to take me there from the time I was probably 8 or 9. And I watched those guys for several years. So
you were watching the Claude Busters when they were in their prime,
absolutely,
winning world tournaments.
Absolutely, yeah.
It's the same way I got into vintage baseball, except with the Greenfield Village Lottie-Dawgs.
Right.
15 minutes from Greenfield Village, and my dad would always take me there. And there were years when I went every weekend to Greenfield Village and just watched the Lottie-Dawgs play.
Yeah, so. we were the same. I mean, much in the same with them being so close. Go down, they had a little steam engine thing out there popping popcorn, grab a thing of popcorn, sit in and take in the game. So I think we're probably in the rarity of guys who kind of grew up as fans of the game,
right,
and
which
came to it that way.
I mean, interesting in like the sense of the game, because I would say like we're still two of the younger players in the game. So I wonder if it's like
not
the youngest, but like on the younger side.
We certainly are, yeah.
So it's like I wonder if in, you know, like 5, 10, 15 years with, you know, more vintage baseball teams expanding and there being more teams now than there were 20 years ago, maybe not 20, but like 15 years ago when we were watching.
Yeah.
If there will be more kids, more younger people getting involved in the game.
I hope so. I mean, they said, I not to go off on a complete tangent here, but the example by which they played is still what I try to do. Because to me as a kid, it was, I mean, I literally felt like I was going back in time.
Yeah,
and I try, and I fail sometimes, and I think we all do. I try to remind myself that that is who we're playing to.
Yeah.
Right? That's the standard by which we're trying to do this.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I think we lose sight of that sometimes. I think everybody does from time to time.
For sure.
You and I have had that conversation separately from this.
But. So before we go forward, Mike, you're young in terms of years, but what you've put your body through, you're coming to the end.
Yeah.
I just want you to know that it's just about over.
Though. I feel good.
You are just one incident away from retirement. You have like LeBron James miles on your body.
Probably.
Like,
probably.
The
we
schedule,
do say, he's the LeBron James of vintage baseball. We say that a lot. Yeah.
In so many ways. More ways than I can count.
Talk about the hairline? Or
You're very marketable.
I like that.
By the way, the fat bottom girl is amazing. Does anybody want to switch with me?
I already drank all of mine, so.
Yeah. I mean, just to be able to taste it.
I'll switch with you.
The Zach Morris is... I love it.
So I'm going to want a pint of that after this.
I forget what I'm drinking, but it's good.
You're fine?
Yeah.
You're drinking the Be Madness.
Yes. This is quite tasty.
Okay.
Nick, how was your beer?
It was delicious.
Okay.
Thoroughly enjoyed it.
Awesome. We do have Chimney Lube that we'll pass around to everybody except Mike, because did you bring in your water?
I did not.
Do you need a water?
I'm okay right now.
No, you're probably behind on your water ratio right now. How many gallons of water are you going to put in that body today?
Probably about one and a half.
You're not carrying around a gallon.
Yeah, he is.
I got a jug in the car.
He is.
It's one of those guys.
It's cold out.
Oh,
it might freeze.
How do you think I play 50 games a year?
True.
Okay, Nick. So we're up to the Columbus Capitals. You've played five, six seasons. How many?
This will be my 10th.
Yeah, I don't know where I came up with that number.
Hey, it's a good number.
It's close.
It
wasn't far off.
It's close.
You got to undershoot it. Mike, the price is right. So let's go ahead and talk about your favorite on-field vintage baseball memory.
Okay. I think for me it's got to be winning the 2016 Battle for Ohio, our state championship. The final game of that, Jody Kula, New York Kula, we were, I believe, in extra innings, if memory serves. And Jody's probably the most soft-spoken guy on our team, which isn't saying much because we're all loud idiots. But Jody doesn't say very much. Kind of keeps to himself, certainly in the competitive nature. He's not a trash talk guy or anything like that. Jody hits an absolute bomb over the left fielder that ultimately results in being a walk-off double to win the game. But as he does, he screams at the top of his lungs, "Get out of here!" as he hits the ball. And like, it's just, it's one of those moments that just lives in Capitol lore, because we've got guys who you can totally picture doing that. You can see Mouth Klein being that guy. Everybody knows he's that guy.
But for it
to come out, yeah, I'm sure you haven't.
I think he does that when it pops up.
Yeah, he does. ground ball to short. But for that to come out of, and I had actually been, I was out of that game. I had dislocated a toe. I had like popped the toe back in earlier in the game. I wasn't able to play. So just watching that happen from the bench to win the battle for Ohio after losing the first of the championship round, I don't know. For me, that's probably like, if I'm defining it all in one moment,
you know,
just the explosion of emotion out of Jody that kind of defined, you know, defined how much it meant to him and meant to us in that moment.
And then, of course, I always like to go to the other spectrum. Most embarrassing moment on a vintage baseball field.
Oh, God. There's a lot of those. I mean, honestly, it's probably how I got my nickname, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, go by too far. And I think everybody always tries to make these inferences on how it happened. Or like, I do tend to take a joke too far. So sometimes everybody wants to think it's that. But actually what happens, I was playing second base. And I came running in on a short pop-up and I slid to catch it. And I had never slid in the Dickie-style pants we have. And if you slide in those things, you go six times further than you think you're going to. So I slid a foot and a half past the ball. I'm reaching back over my head to try to catch it. And before it even hits the ground, I go,
shucks.
Too far. And that's where it all came from. So that's where the nickname originated. And I got to say, that's probably still the most embarrassing one. It stuck with me for 10 years.
Yeah. It was one of your first games, or your first game.
I don't think it was. No, my first game was up in Akron, and this happened at home.
Yeah.
So maybe my second
game.
Maybe
my second game.
Second weekend with the team.
Eric was next to you, and then he was like, oh, that's it, right there.
Yeah, Eric locked it in right there.
All right, Nick, right now we're going to take a break and talk about one of our sponsors. And while we're doing that, we're going to pass around this Chimney Lube Christmas Ale, just freshly tapped here at the Ill-Mannered Brewery. Nick, if you want to go ahead and take the first sample of that. This segment of the show is brought to you by Oxygen. Now, when we get sponsors for the show, we heavily vet how good, you know, we try these sponsors. We use their products. And let me tell you something. I don't think I could live without Oxygen. It is amazing. The oxygen here in Ohio is a lot like the oxygen I experience in Michigan. Mike, do you notice a difference in the oxygen?
No, it seems exactly the same.
But it's good. You want it to be exactly the same.
I don't want it to be any different than what it is right now.
If you're listening to this podcast right now, if you don't get anything else from this podcast, listen to me now. Go outside, try the oxygen. It's amazing.
And we're back.
All right. So, Nick, what we're going to get into right now is just some random stuff, but I do want everybody to know, because this is a teaser. After this next segment, we are getting into curling with Nick.
Can't wait.
Nick, quickly tell everybody why we're getting into curling.
I'm a competitive curler in the winter, so when I'm not on the vintage baseball field, I am on the ice.
So curling, one of those sports that nobody gives a crap about until the Olympics happen. Is that accurate?
Not in the circles I run in.
The general population.
General population, nobody could care. And then when the Olympics roll around,
everyone treats it like it's the coveted. It's almost like ice skating as well. They do that. They're like, oh, I love ice skating. But they haven't seen it in 4 years. So Winter Olympics every 2 years. No, every four years.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we had them in 18.
Was it ever every 2 years? Ever?
I think at one point.
I
don't know.
So what I'm learning right now is I'm not up on my Olympics, but the curling, it's important.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, so hang on for that segment. We're saving it for the end because I know you want to hear about the curling. This ain't no lie. Okay, let's go over some of the subjects that we've gone over that you are interested in talking about. And since we just got done with vintage baseball, we're going to go right into a vintage baseball story off the field. And I have North Carolina in my notes.
Oh, Jesus Christ. I really don't know if we can tell this story.
I think you should, because I haven't.
I mean, I think we'll edit versions and maybe leave out the
final. Let me tell you, before you decide what and what you're not going to say.
Fair.
This podcast is going to have an episode with J.D. Klein, uncensored, unfiltered. Nothing will be changed from it. Whatever you say controversial in this segment will be forgotten about
that's
that
fair.
Day.
That's fair.
So that's please, fair. Tell us the North Carolina story.
Well, I mean, we got down, Sarah and I, my wife and I got down there later, a day after everybody. And I just recall walking into a bar the night after. And we walked into the bar and the bartender introduces himself to Bandit Wyckoff. And Mike looks at him and goes, "I don't know who you are." And it's literally the next conversation is, "You don't remember being here last night?" And no, I don't. So that's kind of how our introduction to North Carolina started. It was one of those end-of-season trips, not a real competitive event. And I think most of the Capitals were drunk the entire time we were there. Yeah. I recall specifically Rudy chasing me around. I'd forgotten about this part of it until we just opened it back up. I was going a completely different direction with this.
I completely forgot.
Well, we were going a completely different direction with this story, which is best that we probably leave out. Why the hell were you chasing me around the motel?
I don't know.
2 o'clock in the morning.
And you disappeared.
We had been watching the terrible Alabama-LSU 9-6 game. Was that night?
Yeah, that was the game of the century.
The game of the century was so bad we all just got absolutely plastered instead of paying attention to the football game at all. And I can't put any context to it.
I don't know.
It's 2 o'clock in the morning, 2:30 in the morning, it's cold,
yeah.
And for some reason, I am running away from Rudy.
And literally...
At the outdoor motel, literally just up and down the balconies, he's screaming at me, I'm laughing at him, unable to catch me at 2:30 in the morning.
Yeah.
But I can't remember why.
But the only thing I remember is that you turned a corner and I was like, "Oh, I got him now," and you were gone. And then I was like, I went back to the room and I was like, "Guys, I don't..." He's gone.
I think I dipped into like a utility closet.
Yeah,
like, it was I rounded the corner and there was an open door right there. I was like, "Got him."
I was like, "Where did he go?" And no, it was a night where the Atlantics had taken us out.
Don't drink with those guys.
The Brooklyn Atlantics. I was unable to function Sunday for our games. Like, and then they knew it and then they hit the ball at me.
Yeah. Yeah. That transpired into the drunkest, most hungover game I've ever been a part of with the Capitals, which is saying something.
Yeah.
That was also what transpired that game with Mike Wyckoff as well, was unable to recover from the debauchery the night before and took the most hilarious pop-up off the face that I've ever seen. And did somebody catch it?
It bounced off his face and then threw my fingertips in center field. I was like, "I'm going to get it." And it was
maybe the single worst play I've ever seen, but it was absolutely hysterical. I mean, it hit Mike. I can't emphasize enough how much it hit him directly in the face. This was not a glancing blow. This was not it hit him in the shoulder and we say it hit him in the face. It hit him maybe an inch and a half above the bridge of his nose, right on the forehead.
Yep.
So hard that it popped 15 feet straight into the air, and Rudy about made a play on it. Yeah. So. And then North Carolina weekend's probably just the off the field.
What was the event?
Eric Lautenbacher, Red Lautenbacher, former Muffin, and the late great Scott Treon from the Caracho Clodbusters had formed teams in North Carolina, and then they wanted to put together an event, so they invited the Brooklyn Atlantics. They had two teams, and then they invited the Capitals, so that it was just an event they did.
You guys get invited to a lot of stuff. Okay, let's transition into injuries. Now we heard about your Little League disaster, the no pitch count that you were going on. Have you incurred any other significant injuries in Vintage or in your personal life?
I mean, in Vintage, I've got a laundry list of mostly hands, it seems like.
Really?
Yeah. Lots of fingers, lots of hands. I'm sure we all share that. A couple things here and there. I got pretty much knocked out one time. Took a shot to the head up in Upper Sandusky.
Yeah.
Somebody thought it'd be a good idea to try to jump over me on a play at the plate. Turns out he didn't jump that well. So I took a knee right to the dome, right in the head. Got the out, I think.
You don't know.
I mean, the first thing somebody said was like, "Don't block the plate with your head." I was like, "Thanks, guys." My ears are ringing and my eyes are red. I don't know. But outside of it, I've got actually have a torn rotator cuff right now. I'm still not quite sure how that came about. So we learned that
a long-term, little bit here, a little bit there injury?
Seem to think it's something I did recently, but I don't really recall anything. So
are you on the shelf for 2020?
That remains to be seen a little bit. It's not my throwing arm, which is good. So I'm working on just rub some dirt on it. So just trying to kind of rehab it, strengthen it, see, try to avoid the surgery route if we can.
Okay. Let's talk about one of my favorite subjects, Netflix or any other streaming media movie site. What have you watched recently and what do you recommend?
I think probably my favorite recently is a show called Dark, which is on Netflix. It is a German show, but they've dubbed English over it. And after like an episode and a half, you kind of get used to it. At first, it really pisses you off that their mouths aren't going with what's being said, but then you just kind of forget about it. It's kind of a really dark time travel related. It's actually kind of terrible when you see what happens to these people. We enjoyed it as a show, so we've killed both
you and your
myself and my wife. Yeah.
Oh, so she watches.
We've watched. We've watched both seasons of that, and I think they've got a third season coming up this winter. So that would probably be my recommendation. Really enjoyed it.
You got something that you watched on somebody else's recommendation that absolutely sucked, and you just can't tell them.
Can't see. Well, I tell everybody everything to a fault. I don't think like shows recently. No, we watched one the other night. The Expanse. My wife's curling team. They're all big into this. She's like,
What? Your wife curls too?
Yeah, she's fantastic. Guys.
How is she not here right now?
We could have arranged that. Well, she's recovering from
son
a pretty
of a
nutcracker.
Hangover. We got a long drive ahead of us today. Yeah, so that's probably your answer. But we watched like 15 minutes of The Expanse the other day. We had to turn it off. It's stupid. We're not getting into this. This isn't our cup of tea.
90s wrestling. Who were your favorite wrestlers? You see. My thing about professional wrestling, and Mike can back me up on this, is everybody says they don't watch wrestling, but every city they go to, they sell out this 15,000 arena and stuff. Everybody's watched wrestling at some point in their life.
Absolutely.
So, according to your age profile, you're a 90s wrestling guy. Who were they?
I was a Generation X guy. Shawn Michaels was probably my favorite. I actually was really into WCW at one point too, so yeah. I was into a lot of those guys. The NWO deal was I was into that. Sting, so probably like Shawn Michaels would probably be number one on my list at the time. That was my guy.
Favorite match of Shawn Michaels?
Montreal Screwjob.
Oh. Boy,
everybody loves that one, right?
Yeah. The best storylines in wrestling are the real
that's
ones.
That's right. Absolutely.
Wait, you're saying it's not all real?
Well, I'm just saying when you take something that's happening for real and you introduce it into what's going on, that's when you get the best stuff because it is real.
It's still real.
They're finding out as you are.
All right, yeah, the NWO stuff that was pretty hot. From what I understand about the NWO stuff, that was like Japanese wrestling storytelling is how the NWO came up.
Really?
So, because Eric Bischoff, who was in charge of WCW, was really into Japan wrestling and everything, and he would see these kinds of real storylines happening, so that's how that all came up. And I think that's how that got popular, because at the time, WWF, which is probably before your guys' time, WWF was doing like characters that were ridiculous.
Oh yeah,
like
absolutely
Doink the Clown, and
yeah,
there was a hockey player, the Goon, and
the Repo Man.
Oh God, it was so bad. But yes, so, okay, we also have a famous person or people that you have met.
Probably the funniest, meeting. I mean, recently we've actually gotten to know the guys who won the curling Olympic gold medal, so that's been
famous people, Nick.
Yeah, they're famous. but the funniest one is I was in LA for the Rose Bowl, and, it would have been 2010, and we're walking down the street near the Staples Center, and there's this guy in front of us, tall, 6'9", and two very, very, very attractive young ladies with him, and we're standing maybe 3 or 4 feet away from this guy at a stoplight, we've all had a little bit to drink, and my buddy sees this guy kind of turn over his shoulder. My buddy goes, "Is that Blake Griffin?" And Blake Griffin turns around, looks right at us, and goes, "Yeah, that's him." And then turns around and just goes about his business crossing the street. We're like, holy
flop doodle.
Shit. Like, it was just like the moment for him to turn around and say, "Yeah, that's him." And he didn't say, "It's me." He said, "Yes, that's him." And then turned around and walked away from us.
All right. So, hey, Nick, what do you do for employment? What is your job?
I'm a project manager. I run the construction department of a restoration company, depending on when this airs.
So, your first job when you were growing up, as a summer job, you were a painter. Is that related? Did that evolve into what you do now?
Yeah, I mean, in some sense. So, I started with a company called Student Painters. So, it's a group that basically does internships for college kids to run their own painting business. I started as a painter in high school, kind of worked my way up there to the point that I was running my own really region of the company. So I had my own branch in Troy where I grew up, and then had, I think, four under me in Ohio that I oversaw. So I got to know a little bit about the contracting realm. Went to Ohio State, graduated, got the same job that everybody does with a shitty communication degree that means nothing. Just wear a bad suit to work every day and selling people things they didn't need. I hated it. And I just kind of worked my way back into the contracting realm. So with that experience kind of fit naturally.
Why? Let me ask you this. Why do not they invent paint that you only have to put one layer on?
Because then they don't sell as much.
Okay. But, you know, they do have paint that claims, Bear, I'm talking to you, that claims that it's primer and paint in one and you only need one coat, but that's...
Boulder Dash.
Yeah, in most cases, that's true.
Okay. We are so close to talking about curling right now, but we're going to talk about this beer. Because once again, we are coming to you from the Ill Mannered Brewery in Powell, Ohio.
I need to roll that.
And, oh my God. Today is 16. Oh, 16 is my Thanksgiving leftovers. This is a cranberry fruit tart, so it must be that way. Okay, so everybody's leaving. You can still have one.
I can have one. Scott's driving.
Right. So do you want Chimney Lube?
Yes, Chimney Lube.
Chimney Lube was awesome.
It tasted like...
It's pretty good beer.
It tasted like Christmas, y'all. Yeah. I'm going to be honest.
It's a good beer.
Oh, this is going to be a long day.
Keep it. I'm on. Having the Thanksgiving leftovers. The other people are driving. And Mike has a gallon of water in my truck. Okay, so right now, we're going to get into what I've been waiting for weeks.
Like, by far.
I hope I can live up to this.
The second I mentioned... You were the first person I mentioned... when he was like, "Hey, I want to talk to some Capitals," and you were the first person, and he went, "Yes, that needs to happen now."
So let me tell you. So I go through a process of trying to get vintage baseball on television. Last year, were you at the Frankenmuth Festival?
I was not last year. No.
Dick.
Were you there the first year?
I've not been there. No, it hasn't. For some reason, hasn't worked out for me.
One of the things I try to do is try to get vintage more of a voice out there, and I often say, you know, there's ESPN2 or ESPN Ocho that really has some ridiculous sporting events, and right now Rudy, Mike, and I and Nick are going to name ridiculous sporting events we've seen on television until somebody can't name one. I'm going to go with cornhole.
Watermelon seed spitting.
Oh. Dodgeball.
Darts.
But definitely hot dog eating contests.
Rock skipping.
Curling.
Listen. What's that spike ball game?
Yeah.
That's been on TV.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
How about running with the bulls?
Ultimate frisbee.
Oh. Is that false? What's that? Falf? Frolf? Whatever.
I may be stuck here.
Professional wrestling.
Oh. Ding, ding, ding.
That's good.
Oh, Mike, we'll be getting into that later.
I feel like mini golf should have been on TV. I haven't seen it.
It used to be.
Was it?
I've seen, like, they run replays of, like, putt-putt from, like, it's probably from the 70s and 80s, but I remember seeing this.
I got one. It's not too late.
What is there?
Roller hockey. They used to do it on ESPN.
Yeah.
Too.
Roller derby with the chicks?
No, roller hockey. It was called like California Beach Hockey or something of the sort. I've been looking to buy it on DVD.
Yeah, anybody who does that is lame.
Adam does that.
I mean, it was like in like a cage. Okay. California, like they had like these old like washed up NHL goalies.
It wasn't too late for you to throw in an answer, but it was too late for you to not lose.
Oh,
so,
okay, that's fair.
Now the moment I've all been waiting for.
I've all been waiting for.
Talk to me about your curling. How did it start? Where are you at with it, and where do you want it to go?
So I kind of fell in love with the sport. Watched it for several years, really. Always wanted to try it. Knew there was a curling club in Columbus, but never made my way out there. As most great decisions that I make, I was drunk at a company tailgate party with one of my clients, and he happened to start talking about how he wanted to try curling. I said, well, all right, let's do it. You know, that was my impetus to do it. So AJ and I went, got like a private lesson the next weekend. He never came back, and I never left. I brought my wife out to try about a month later. She jumped into it as well, so which is good. It's something we do together in the winter, and just kind of took off from there. So I've been playing for 4 years now. Played all over the country now. Started playing a little bit on the Ontario Curling Tour this year. My first money events here this year. So it's been a lot of fun. It's really a cool sport. It actually has a lot of parallels, I think, not in the game itself, but in the culture around it to vintage baseball. Really high levels of sportsmanship are expected. No real, you're not getting into the trash talking. You're congratulating your opponents on a good shot, even playing at the highest levels. And one of the great traditions of curling is after any game, the two teams that have just played each other for two and a half hours go sit down somewhere in the club and they have a beer where the winners by the losers the first round. And then the losers reciprocate if time allows. So I think that really kind of appealed to me as well.
Okay, so I'm going to throw some curling terms at you. Okay. And I want you to explain what exactly it is.
Can't wait.
And then after this, I'm going to explain to you what I see when I watch curling.
Oh, I
and
can't wait.
Then you explain to me what exactly is happening.
Fantastic.
Okay, explain to me what the hammer is.
The hammer is the last shot of each end. So curling is played in ends, much like baseball is played in innings. So the team with the hammer has the advantage in that particular end of throwing the last rock.
So you could almost guess what that meant.
I think so.
I had no
idea.
That's
actually kind of a term that's made its way into society. I mean, I've heard people refer to as being the home team in baseball or batting last as having the hammer.
As far as a term that you would not be able to guess, hogged stone.
So a hogged stone kind of like got to get into the rules of curling a little bit. There are what's called hog lines at both ends of the sheet. And in order for a stone to be in play, it has to be thrown past the opposite hog line. So a hog stone is a situation where a player has failed to throw the shot far enough to get it into play. It usually results in that player having to buy his team a round after the game, too, in most cases, or for some teams, a cash payment. So something you don't want to do. Very embarrassing.
So what, in turn, is a burned stone?
So a burned stone is also something you don't want to do. When your sweepers are sweeping in front of that rock, they are not allowed to touch it. So a burned stone is when a sweeper hits that stone as it's coming down the ice. And depending on where it happens on the ice, that stone is either immediately pulled from play or the stone's allowed to play out what happens at that end, and then the opposing skip gets to decide whether or not things go back as they were or stay as they've happened.
And we're going to end on... No.
Can't wait.
We're going to end on what is the shot rock?
So shot rock is the current counting stone. So it's the at any given moment within the end, it is the shot that is sitting closest to the button. It's the counting stone at that point.
Okay. How close would you say curling is to shuffleboard?
It gets compared a lot, but I really don't find that there are many congruencies at all. If you're looking from a scoring perspective and how things happen, the better comparison would be bocce. You know, because you've got your target ball, and I don't play bocce, but I've seen it enough to understand what it is. You've got a target ball, and then everybody's trying to be the closest to it. So it's more that in the sense of how things are scored than it is shuffleboard.
Nick, what do you got in the way of social media? Are you on the Facebooks?
I am.
And that is Nick Sanders. No K in that Nick, right?
Okay.
Are you on the Instagrams?
No.
Are you on the Twitters?
I am on the Twitters.
And that is at?
NSanders310.
Okay, I want everybody that heard this episode of the podcast to go ahead and look up Nick Sanders and tell him how shuffleboard is exactly what curly is.
Better yet, I actually run the Twitter account for the Columbus Curling Club. So if you want to do it there, it's at Columbus Curling. May even be more fun.
Okay, perfect. Here we go. When you watch curling on the Olympics, because that's the only time people watch it.
Sure.
I'm going to explain some stuff to you. I see. Tell me what they're doing.
Okay.
Is it necessary for the thrower? What is he called? He's not the thrower. Yeah. He's the thrower of the stone?
Sure.
Okay. Yeah. Why is he sliding along the ice on one knee before he lets it go?
So that's allowing, as opposed to just standing there and sliding the rock down the ice, you really control the depth, the distance that we refer to as the weight, how hard that stone is thrown, by your push out of the hack. So the hack is what you see them pushing out of. And that long slide is allowing you to control your weight, and it's also allowing you to put that stone right on the line you want to start it on.
Okay. Now, Nick, let me ask you this. Ice is slippery.
It is.
Why are there two people with giant brooms cleaning the ice? It seems as though they're trying to dictate the speed of the stone, even though it's sliding across ice, which would seem impossible to do.
Yeah, so basically what those sweepers are doing, to simplify it as much as possible, is they're allowing that stone to go straighter and to go further. So it doesn't actually speed it up. It just reduces the friction in front of the stone to allow it to carry further. So probably the most common misconception with curling is everybody thinks I can just go out onto a hockey rink and throw a curling stone, and that's what we do. Curling ice is actually different than hockey ice. Hockey ice, you want it to be perfectly smooth. Curling ice is actually what we call pebbled. So if you look at it closely, it's actually textured. Were it flat, there'd be too much friction on the bottom of the stone for it to go anywhere. So what those sweepers are doing is they're just kind of temporarily heating that ice in front of it to reduce the surface tension of the stone coming across it, which causes less friction, causes the stone to go further, causes the stone to go straighter.
Okay, I knew there was a reason. There had to be a reason. All right, that's going to bring to an end our episode today with Nick Sanders. I want to say thank you to the Ill-Mannered Brewing Company for having us here today. I want to say thank you to Nick Sanders. Thanks for coming, Nick.
Thanks for having me.
I also want to say thanks to Mike Feeney for sitting in and being my companion for the weekend. Take it as you will.
Yes.
Cuddle time.
And remember, when you look up podcast episodes and you pass by the Roller Out the Barrel podcast, you've probably gone too far. Thank you, everybody. We'll check you out next time.